Hadi bakalım.
Well, it turns out the government shutdown was all just to keep Thomas Massie from getting the votes he needed to release this next batch of the Epstein files. And we talk all about that today on this episode of Human Reaction.
Welcome to Human Reaction, everybody. I'm David Randall. With me is Joe Sheehan. We're sans Kyle and Bennett this week, but about to have a good time digging into our favorite Mossad contractor? Agent? Probably not agent, but contractor. Sitting in the middle, he's talking to Russian oligarchs, he's talking to Israeli spies, he's lobbying Obama to go into Syria.
Oh.
Yeah, let's go, guys.
Let's get in.
It'd be interesting. So, but first, don't forget to like, subscribe, hit that like button down below. It's right down here. Check it out. Hit it. Up it. And then subscribe it. And when you got the subscription, hit that little notification bell so you know when our videos come out. And if you're on Spotify, make sure to also like do the little star thing. Mm-hmm. It really helps other people find us in the algorithm. We just crossed 2,000 YouTube subscribers, and we're growing like crazy. And we need your help to keep getting the word out about all the cool Human Reaction show we're doing.
That's right, and there's a lot of it, for sure. And going to be cooler stuff coming down the pipeline. As we talked about the past show, we've got some exciting new member benefits. So if you want to support the show financially and become a member, you have some really cool stuff to look forward to.
Hell yeah.
All right.
All right, so start off. So the number was reached, 218 for the discharge petition. Thomas Massie, our boy, did it. He did it. Woo!
Love to see it.
Ro Khanna, and of course we got this from the Democrat side, who brought all the Democrats on board, and they got Marjorie Taylor Greene here with her note here, or her ex post about it.
Next week, we will be voting to release the Epstein files. I honestly believe it is not only the right thing to do for the victims, but it is also the right thing to do for the country. Americans deserve transparency. Remember, Democrats had 4 years under Biden to release it all, but never even tried or cared. Now, under full Republican control, there were only four Republicans that signed the discharge petition for the Massie resolution to release the Epstein files. Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Nancy Mace, and Lauren Boebert. Next week, when everyone is forced to go on record to vote to release the Epstein files, I expect the number of Republicans to be a lot higher that actually vote yes. But remember the original four.
Yes. Yes. If you're scoring this vote, these are the four who actually get it. The Democrats, do I give them much credit? No. You guys weren't doing this a year ago.
It's all political gamesmanship. They think it'll hurt Trump, and they want to release it so that he will be implicated. And the question I think a lot of people are asking is, was he implicated?
Yeah. I think the mental model you should use for how to think about the Epstein files right now is, at first, it was a campaign promise, right? It became the battle of the campaign promise. So one of the reasons why Democrats couldn't do it last year, beyond their, you know, being Democrats and just being what they are, is the fact that Donald Trump was kind of campaigning on it. So you can't give him his campaign promise.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then it got into office, a couple months went by, and it's like, nothing to see here. It's all Democrat oaks. I don't know.
That was a little Bill Cosby.
Yeah, I don't know why I became Bill Cosby all of a sudden. And now it's pretty much a political gunfight where they're kind of releasing files to like damage the other side. And so I want to go through what got released today. This can't be exhaustive. It's 20,000 non-searchable images.
Oof.
So it's going to be quite tedious to bring it all together, but it gives researchers a lot to dig into. So no small thing. This is a release from the Republican members of the Oversight Committee. And unlike the last release, well, there's really been three other releases, and we haven't covered the other two either. The other two releases, which we will get to towards the end, but I don't want you to forget that they're coming, is the DropSite News has Epstein-related emails, but it's actually from a hack of Ehud Barak. He's the former Israeli prime minister and defense minister.
Mm.
Interesting stuff. Who had quite the little spy life after in retirement. And then Epstein Estate also dropped some stuff earlier this summer that also got really weird. And that one was like the birthday card and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Why would the Epstein estate release files?
Well, somehow the New York Times got a hold of this thing from the estate. I don't know what that means.
And that was the birthday card from Trump to Epstein, yep. Which was obviously sort of more of a hit job focus, like trying to...
That's what it turned into. And that's what I mean by like the gunfight, right? Right. They're kind of like bullets to be fired at the other side. And this one doesn't look good for many Democrats. One more thing before we dig into the emails I do think is important. Of that list, Thomas Massie, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Nancy Mace, Lauren Boebert. Lauren Boebert was actually brought to, like, right before the actual discharge petition became available, before they came back into session and actually could be, like, executed. She was brought to the White House.
Oh.
And apparently, like, cornered by the president, as reported. Now, after this being brought to the White House, she talked to the press, said, no, the president just asked me to change my vote, and I told him no. It was all very friendly. Everyone's super great in the administration. I love everybody. You don't know. That's what you would say. You know, if I was in her shoes, that's what I would say too.
Yeah.
So you don't know how much pressure or how negative the pressure was or anything like that, but she held firm, you know, after that. And that's no small thing.
Yeah.
And it's something else to watch these three women and Thomas Massie being the only Republicans to step up and be like, no, actually, we believe the things we say and actually are going to give our constituents the things we said we would do. At least on this, you know, I'm sure they would do on more things if they could, but they have the opportunity at the discharge position.
Yeah. Well, and I just think they're such a good example for the kind of representatives that Americans should be voting for. Like people that are, for all intents and purposes, just ordinary people. I mean, listening to Marjorie Taylor Greene on Tucker and learning a little bit more about her, she was just like a pretty normal person, decided to run, you know, for office because she saw all the troubled things going on in government, got elected. So like it can happen. You don't have to be anybody special.
You too could also be Marjorie Taylor Greene.
This is something we should all aspire to.
Hey, man, she's got brass balls, that lady. I love it. She's kicking ass. So, all right, new releases today, 20,000 pages, Republican House Oversight Committee. First one up, and I'm not going to show a lot of images for these just because it actually detracts more than I think it adds, right? Because you got like the to and the from and all that kind of stuff. And if we got questions, we can dive into it and I'll look it up. All right, so first one, quote, I want you to realize that dog that hasn't barked is Trump. Victim number one spent hours at my house with him. He has never once been mentioned.
Okay, when they say he has never once been mentioned, are they talking about Trump?
Yeah. Yeah. That dog hasn't barked. Now, the dog hasn't barked is a Sherlock Holmes reference. Like, it's a clue. It's from a Sherlock Holmes novel where the dog doesn't bark. So that kind of gives you a clue that something that was claimed didn't actually happen. You know,
interesting.
Therefore, there wasn't an intruder in that case of the Sherlock Holmes story.
Sure.
For this one, victim number one actually turns out to be Virginia Giuffre. Giuffre. She is one of the most famous and the one that released the book and things like that. She's also the one that we also have noted that was very high on ecstasy for pretty much the entire time that we're talking about here. So not always the most reliable witness. But this is an interesting email because it references Virginia Giuffre as spending many hours with him at his house, at Epstein's house.
Spending many hours with Trump at Epstein's house.
Yes.
Okay.
While she was actually from Mar-a-Lago. Like, she was a masseuse at Mar-a-Lago that met Epstein, and then he, like, took her.
Oh.
Right? And then, like, was in his orbit at that point. So, now, this is not also a reliable witness either, because Epstein at this point of all these emails, he's like, kind of got to visualize it, like he's like just trying to get in the loops of things. Like he's jamming, right? He's like trying to find angles to get into the scenes that he wants to be in after his, you know, accuser was accused, but before he went to jail, before he was arrested. So, and Virginia Giuffre was in her, you know, public statements, she was always very clear that Trump was not one of the people who abused her, that it was always Jeffrey Epstein and Alan Dershowitz, I believe. Was she the Alan Dershowitz one, or
I think so, yeah.
And then she also claimed, and I'll say this, so Alan Dershowitz doesn't sue us, she also said that she later on, after he sued her, said that actually she didn't remember that right, or something like that.
It never happened.
Yeah. So, interesting interesting one, but this is one of the ones they're going to point to say that's a major deal. But I actually think that's just not going to, that's not going to hold any weight because of exactly who that victim is, because we now know.
Yeah.
All right. So Epstein in these emails repeatedly trash talks Trump. He calls him, quote, dangerous and, quote, not one decent cell in his body in 2018 emails. So this is after he becomes president. That what's interesting about those is, you know, he's positioning himself as like someone who can stop Trump. Like he's like trying to get media figures to give to get salacious details during the Trump rise to presidency and then as president. So like he's marketing himself as an access to like salacious material for the elite on the Clinton side and on the Trump side. For the Trump side, he's like, you know, like he's emailing people saying, hey, I got pictures of Trump with girls in the bikini in my kitchen, shit like that, right? And like to a guy at the New York Times, he's also doing like rage emails to the opposition lawyer to a sex trafficking lawsuit, Bradley Edwards, to trash talk Trump, repeatedly calling him these words, right? Dangerous, not a good cell in his body. And then in another one, he says that Epstein believed that Hillary was having an affair in the 90s.
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary, quote, Hillary was banging Vince Foster back in the day. Everyone knew it, and that's why he offed himself. Too much guilt or something. Wild times.
Too much guilt or something. Hold on.
Arkansas.
You just can't say that anybody in the Clinton orbit killed themselves and have anyone believe it anymore. It just doesn't pencil.
You know, and that's so that guy is talking about, he's the he's a former long-term colleague at Rose Law Firm in Arkansas. So he was working with Hillary before the governorship and then going off to be president. He later served as the White House Deputy Chief Counsel under Bill Clinton. So the indication there is that the relationship, you know, stayed for a little while later. And then he then died by suicide and a gunshot at Virginia Park on July 20th, 1993. So relatively early in the administration, amid Whitewater scrutiny, a real estate deal involving the Clintons. So there was like some kind of scandal that he might have been tied to right when he died.
Yeah, see, that just doesn't scream suicide to me.
Well, and so one of the things here is it isn't clear whether or not he had exclusive information, because that's who you would think Jeffrey Epstein was. Like, he's got pictures of Bill Clinton in his mansion, we now know, and has been seen with him. And we now, after presidency, Bill Clinton was going to the Lolita Express quite a few times. But even at this time in the 1990s, there were tabloids about this potential affair and even a book called The Clinton Chronicles in 1994, alleging that Hillary and Foster are lovers. There's never been actual material evidence like the smoking gun sort of thing, but it was stipulated. So it's important to kind of like to see Epstein at this time that he's doing this is he's like trying to like say, I have access to the dirt of the high celebrity world. Give me, I'll do you a favor, do me a favor, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Sounds like his job, like his whole racket.
His whole shtick.
Yeah.
So Larry Summers, Clinton's Treasury Secretary and Obama's economic advisor, they have emails from 2016 all the way to 2019 to show Summers venting personal drama to Epstein after his conviction. So like your buddy goes and gets convicted but hasn't been arrested yet, and you're like emailing his, you know, your personal problems to this guy. And then he's seeking, Larry Summers, who's the Clinton's Treasury Secretary, went to Epstein seeking dirt on Trump about Russians.
Interesting.
Yeah. And warning Epstein off Trump's dealings. Epstein offers UN intros and fundraising trips to this guy in the emails.
Interesting.
So, so like not looking good for Trump, for Clinton world. Like it's, you know.
Well, and Obama world.
And this is super late too. Like 2019 is real late. Like that's right at the end.
Well, and this is all in the context of, I mean, all these files are coming out in the context of Tulsi Gabbard, you know, and the revelations that she's coming out with, really putting the heat on the Obama administration for, you know, ginning up the whole Russia hoax and trying to overthrow the president, essentially. So,
yeah. So, and to remind everybody, that was a particular meeting that was had before Obama left office where they were like, we got to leave behind. We need a bronze sword, which is like an old story about like you leave behind the bronze sword to protect your flank as you retreat. to like stave them off. And so the whole idea is that you put in this Russia story and then you can drag out the presidency and undermine his agenda and keep him from maybe getting detente with Putin, right? Keep him from out, like from changing that much because he has to contend with this scandal that is a completely made up scandal based upon the Hillary Clinton campaign, chartering a former British spy to generate bullshit and then send it on. And just printing it uncritically.
And clearly here also, you know, Larry Summers being, I assume, sent out to try to retrieve similar dirt, similar bullshit.
Yes. From Epstein. Interesting. Right.
Of all people.
Yeah. And we don't know what Epstein gave him. All we have is just the emails back and forth on this. So staff kept Epstein informed of Trump's air travel. So there's a bunch of like staff emailing like Trump is here, Trump is there. And Epstein kept up with the news about Trump after he's moved into politics. This is circa 2017. Yeah. So like there's obviously like a very clear, like he was tracking what Trump is going to say, what he's going to do, where he's going to be. Obviously looking at like, oh, is this guy going to go after me? Or is it like, you know, this can be covered many different ways. People are going to definitely spin all of these in different ways, but you can't get any of that out of there. All we really know is that staff were instructed by Epstein to tell him where Trump was.
Interesting.
Anytime he moved.
Yeah, you could look at that a couple ways, right? Obviously, like you said, is Trump going to go after Epstein? Is he concerned, you know, trying to keep tabs on him for personal reasons? Or is it more like his employer wants tabs to be kept, and so he's doing the keeping?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so at least one story that I thought was interesting, kind of related to that, was Tom Barrack, right? So one of the emails to Tom Barrack is like, hey...
Who's Tom Barrack?
Tom Barrack is a billionaire private equity and real estate mogul. He was close to the Trump and then became an ambassador to Turkey under Trump 1.
Okay.
So he's running, and he's, you know, between private equity especially, right? So he's running in a very similar circle to Jeffrey Epstein. Tom Barrack's also from New York. So like all these people kind of know each other. They're all part of the same clique.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey Epstein's like, hey, I know you're in Europe. Let me let you know if I can connect you to people, to Tom Barrack, right? Trying to be helpful, you know, be a connector, be a, that sort of. And then he has this really creepy one that's like, send photo of you, you and child. Make me smile. What the fuck?
Oh my God, ew, David.
I haven't even done it.
Oh my God, ew, David.
That's right.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy stuff. So like, you know, we don't know what that means. He could, like, if we didn't know everything we knew about Jeffrey Epstein, maybe this guy didn't, right? But,
well, okay, hold okay. on.
All right, maybe
hold
I'm being on. Too generous.
That's very generous.
I'm Montanan. I try to be generous and like assume the best in people, you know, but it's hard to do that with Jeffrey.
Yeah, I was going to say, of all people, to assume like, the best of.
So like, is it grandfatherly? Like he's trying to appeal to this guy who does have kids, you know, like, hey, send me a picture of your kids. How's it going? You know, that sort of thing. Or is it like, you know, like, you know, like, ugh.
I mean, knowing what we know now, you can't see that without some color.
Fair enough. Yeah. And then, the last one of the most recent one, and this is still there, is that Steve Bannon, Epstein was actively courting Steve Bannon for influence and networking. So this is post Epstein's 2008 conviction, but pre-arrest. This is 2018 to 2019. So the emails don't show Bannon responding much. He's kind of like, you know, kind of brief, terse, like, yeah, going okay, you know. And that was another one he emailed Bannon, like, hey, you want contacts in Europe, that sort of thing. So it's like it's a pretty common theme, is like he's like reaching out to these people that he had prior to going into government emails for, trying to get into the circles of power. But very clearly, I mean, it's hard to read Steve Bannon's emails and even Tom Barrack's or any of these things and really get the impression that they were being taken in by Epstein or something like that, or like had a close relationship with him at this juncture. Maybe they did before. I know Steve Bannon was working in like a Jeffrey Epstein documentary at one point.
Right.
But it never like released. I don't know. He needs to be asked questions of. He really deserves the public a lot more information about this era.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah. I would agree for sure.
Yeah. So obviously this is well after the documentary was being made and when he was actually in government. But yeah, there it is. And so like this is something that from the low resolution picture, you would think that Republicans would be more hesitant to put this stuff out about allies, right? So doesn't that exactly make Trump look good when the stuff about the dog that doesn't bark doesn't make Steve Bannon look good? But also, like, everyone knows that these are just emails and there's no, like, nothing that really incriminating. So why not just release the files?
Right.
Like, why do we got to do it this way? This, like, gunfighting way? Like,
well, to be honest, I mean, like, all of the hoax narrative that Trump was putting out about the Epstein files, you know, being this Democrat ploy to undermine him or whatever, it just makes him look more guilty and more suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, especially if this is all that it is.
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh, okay, like, well, whatever. There's no smoking gun, like you said, so there's nothing really to go with. It's going to maybe have its flash in the pan moment in the media cycle, and then it's going to go away, and business as usual. Why draw it out and make this whole, like, big kerfuffle about it?
Unless the goal is to drive it out and make a big kerfuffle about it, right? I don't... But that,
to,
like,
distract from something else?
But it undermines his own people's, like, energy for him. Like, and I just don't know if they believe in that anymore. If they're like, oh, we'll lose it, but we'll bring it back. But in the meantime, we can use this as a way to, like, draw out the Democrats and attack them with using it. I don't know. I don't know. I just can't understand what the strategy is. But that's the best I can spin on it to try to get it, like, maybe this is how they're thinking about it. But I don't see it. I think if they would have released all the files right up front, not had to do all this rigmarole, you know, they'll be like, all right, we could talk about Jeffrey Epstein. We talk about Jeffrey Epstein for like a week, maybe two, and then we'd be done.
Yeah.
And we'd be on to new stuff.
Yeah. But I think I also see another side of it, which is that I don't think just these files would have satisfied the people who wanted, like, the client list or the photo evidence or, like, any of that stuff. If it had just come out in the regular order of business, it would have been like, cool, that's great, but that's not enough. We want more. Yeah. And if the momentum stayed up about it, then, you know, it demands that they release more. But if they make it this issue and the government shuts down and we kind of forget about it, but then, you know, they come back and, okay, they get the discharge petition and now here come the files. You're going to get the files.
Yeah.
You get the files, and then it's like, well, that's not what we wanted. It's sort of like the fire is gone from that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But this isn't all the files still. Like, this is just the House Oversight Committee releasing more, right? But
is this all that we were supposed to get under the discharge petition?
No. There's a lot more under the discharge petition, including all the financial records.
Oh.
Right? And that's where the real juice is at. So if they had just done all of this up front, no problem, right? Sure. There would have been a much more release, like, hey, this is phase two and this is phase three, and just, like, rolled them out intentionally. It wouldn't have been a problem. It would have been, it wouldn't have caused so much distrust and so much, like, what the fuck happened?
Right.
Cash Patel.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of it, you know, like, if you do release the financial records and it's like, wow, look at all this crazy financial stuff, and people are doing it, and people are, like, pointing fingers and getting crazy, that's a good thing for the administration. Then they can go decapitate Venezuela or whatever, right? Like, they could be, you know,
under the cover of Epstein.
Exactly. Like, I mean, like, why? I don't get why they aren't controlling it. Like, why wouldn't they just get on top of it and then control the release? That would make way more sense strategically. I don't know what this chief of staff is thinking.
Well,
you know, with this sort of thing, or Susie, the DOJ,
Wiles,
or whatever.
Susie Wiles is, you know, very pro-Israel, close with Netanyahu, I believe worked for Netanyahu, am I mistaken
really?
On that?
Oh.
Or had some position within, you know, Israeli government, I think. Don't quote me on that. I could be totally wrong. But perhaps there is stuff in here that does implicate Israel in a more meaningful way, particularly within the financial records. I could see that where that would really start to tie things together if Epstein was working for Mossad or something similar. Perhaps she really doesn't want these files to come out, and so they were really trying to stop it.
You were right. She worked for him as a consultant in the 2020 re-election campaign.
Right.
So, and very recently. So, yes, I don't... Maybe you're right, but it's happening anyway. So, the Drop Site News has been doing incredible work. They're a Substack, but they're real legit. There's all former New York Times and, like, major reporters who wanted to go do real shit, and they went out and they started this Substack. I subscribed to it. You should, too. It's really great. It often has a little bit of a left tilt, but they're all very skeptical of the U.S. empire, and they do adversarial reporting and legit, like, investigative reporting. So definitely worth checking out. They break news all the time. They put out a four-part series on this, and I got this little, like, headliner clip here. You know, Israeli spy stayed for weeks at time with Jeffrey Epstein in Manhattan. This is okay. So what happened was there was a hacking of Ehud Barak, the former Israeli prime minister and defense minister's emails that then got dropped to Drop Site News. And they've been writing on it. So Ehud Barak, he hung around the New York City apartment quite a bit, going pretty late, actually.
The byline here says, leaked emails show Epstein working on a wire transfer to Ehud Barak's top aide, Yoni Korin, who regularly stayed at his apartment. So that might allude to some of the revelations in the financial releases.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And confirming this stuff. Jeffrey Epstein helped broker Israeli security agreement with Mongolia. Interesting.
Okay. certainly interesting.
Yeah. Jeffrey Epstein and the Mossad. How the sex trafficker helped Israel build a back channel to Russia amid the Syrian civil war.
Wow.
Yeah, and we'll return on that in a second. And then Jeffrey Epstein helped Israel sell a surveillance state to...
Côte d'Ivoire.
French thing?
I believe it's an African country.
Oh, it's a country.
I believe so.
Damn, my geography is really failing me there. So, we'll start out there. So, the emails show that Jeffrey Epstein and Barak were coordinating on a 2015 deal where Israel sold advanced surveillance technology to the Ivorian government. Epstein acted as a middleman. He leveraged his network to smooth U.S. approvals and secure funding, effectively helping Israel export surveillance state model amid human rights concerns in the country at the time. So, be clear: Jeffrey Epstein worked as the grease on the skids so that Israel
could sell
surveillance software stuff to a country. Which country is this?
It's a West African country.
West African country. Yeah, wow. Yeah. So there you go. I don't know my Africa geography, apparently.
There's a lot of countries in there. I think 55.
Yeah, that's a lot of countries.
Yeah, it's a lot of countries.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least I didn't say Africa like it was a country. That's often
that's fair.
Problem Americans have.
I had to learn all of them at some point in school, and that was quite challenging. Yeah.
Well, so there was also the security cooperation with Mongolia, as we said. He uses connections, including figures like Bill Clinton in these emails, he's mentioned in there, to broker a 2016 agreement for Israeli military tech and training in Mongolia. The emails reveal that Epstein's fronting money and introductions, with Barak's team handling the sensitive intel sharing aspects. I don't know why Israel needs a cooperation with Mongolia, but there you go. It is close to Russia, and he does have Russian contacts, so that's important.
That tracks. Yeah. That tracks.
Yeah. So Israel's, and then the spying thing in the New York City apartment. So leaked correspondence shows Epstein wiring funds to Yoni, Barak's top aide and a former Israeli intelligence officer, right? So he is Israeli intelligence. Son. That doesn't prove Epstein was, but it proves that he provided services to them, which has long been the theory that has been so dismissed by so many people who don't want to talk about this. Right. It's always been that he was some kind of middleman for some kind of intelligence agency and with the relationship with his long-term girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, and her father, likely Mossad, was one of them. But maybe French intelligence, maybe CIA, who knows?
MI6?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know.
But I mean, I think it's even more interesting that he could be sort of this tool used by all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because then it goes way further beyond, oh, it's just Mossad, it's just Israel. It's like... every Western government, maybe, you know, all the Five Eyes or mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know, he's this utility person who's very clearly doing very, very terrible and nefarious things. And then all these governments know about it.
Mm-hmm. And doing it late, too. Like, he's doing these in 2015 to 2016. He's still working with Israeli intelligence right before Donald Trump is elected, you know, to do stuff, right? So it's not like he did that way back in the day and he's suddenly being brought to it. Like, he is still, this proves that he never stopped doing that.
Right.
And we look at the rest of the texture of the emails that happened recently, he was still trying to get into these circles and, like, play his game. You know, so, like, the guy never stopped. Right up until the end is what it looks like.
Crazy.
All right. So that gives us insight into who Jeffrey Epstein was in a major way. And then lastly, and this is the one that really, like, I think is probably the biggest deal from DropSite, the back channel to Russia on Syria. The emails spanning from 2013 to 2016, so pretty much the length of the early phases of the war in Syria, where it was at its worst, exposed Epstein and Barak, not Barack Obama, Barak, Ehud Barak, the Israeli, former Israeli guy, plotting a Russian-led effort to oust, plotting a effort to get Israel to talk to Russia about ousting Syrian President Bashar al-Assad early on in the war, right? And it was like this effort to get him to use his contacts and the Russian oligarchs to then get Israel to be able to lobby them to like, hey, man, this war is really bloody and terrible. Why don't we just end it by having you get rid of Assad and like putting an ultimatum to Assad to have him pull out? Russia never pulled the deal. Some of these get really like he's actually like writing things for, I think this is what it looks like. It's weird because you don't always get like the full context, because sometimes it's like they had a phone call and now they're like doing a follow-up email or something like that.
Right.
And one of them is like a speech written by Jeffrey Epstein for Ehud Barak or something like that. That's what it reads like. Wow. About how terrible the war is and how Assad needs to step down and all that kind of stuff. So, and also significantly here is that Epstein was in the emails offering services and probably performing services to influence in DC to push Barack Obama to go into Syria.
Really?
Yeah, to knock out air defenses based upon the red line and all the shit that happened back then, the sarin gas thing and all that jazz.
Backpack sniffers.
Yeah, the backpack sniffing. Long-term viewers know. Doesn't smell like
it. Smells like
doesn't
gas.
Doesn't smell like gas.
Gay!
So this, you know, outreaching to Vladimir Putin is interesting, especially when you put in the context of the other emails that we got more recently about like, hey, I got my got dirt from Russian oligarchs and that kind of role. So to what degree he was wrapped into the actual, you know, there's like a thread there. It doesn't connect, but it's like it's reaching out to try to touch it to the Russiagate scandal and what Epstein, if he was more intimately involved than maybe we realized, or the Steele dossier maybe wasn't the centerpiece, maybe Epstein had a bigger role. Second to that, that his influence in D.C. persisted through the Obama administration, and probably because you had Clinton, near Clinton people when she was Secretary of State that he was close to. He was close to the Clintons, right? So this kind of demonstrates some texture in that era that we otherwise wouldn't have had, understanding that Jeffrey Epstein was a player in the exercising of Israel trying to get America to conduct their foreign policy for them. Right. And that's another dimension I think people are underweighing here, is the degree to which MAGA is waking up to the contradictions of America First when it comes to our policy with Israel. And Jeffrey Epstein is at the centerpiece of that. Isn't that nuts? Like, really think about it.
Yeah.
You got to contend with this idea that Donald Trump came in with this big idea that we're not going to do regime change wars and we're going to do peace in the Middle East and all that kind of stuff. We don't have to do all that shit's dumb and we're going to be America First. And you have this elite pedophile guy close to the Clintons, his archenemy, Hillary Clinton. And this guy was at the centerpiece of the worst thing that Barack Obama did, right? Which was encourage. If you think the Arab Spring was real, like, that's the challenge, right? A lot of people are still operating as if the Arab Spring is real. But what happened with the Arab Spring is there was probably some real stuff there, but there was definitely a diplomacy 2.0 thing. Mike Benz has really well charted this out.
Yep.
That demonstrates that the U.S. State Department was coordinating with technology companies in the Middle East to encourage uprisings, specifically in key areas that were high priorities for U.S. foreign policy. And the reason why it's high priority for U.S. foreign policy, even though it doesn't really help the U.S. to overthrow the government of Syria, it does help Israel. And Jeffrey Epstein isn't the center of diplomacy 2.0, but he is in the center of the lobby group for outreach to elites in the DC area to persuade Barack Obama to go into Syria. Now, he never did, but he got real close. In fact, his own people lost their damn minds when he started floating the idea, which was probably one of the best things progressives ever did.
Fair.
Actually, like, hold their own guy accountable in that moment. That's because that's the most important thing you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So, how do you think the Trump administration is feeling in light of these files seeing the light of day? At least what we know from these leaks or these releases so far.
Yeah. How are they thinking about it? I don't know. There was a bunch of reports about like an emergency meeting about it, you know. I mean, there's still a lot of files to go through. Don't know what's going to be in them. I don't think that the Republican Oversight Committee put out anything that the Trump administration wasn't largely okay with. And it probably was timed with their benefit, maybe to take the wind out of the sails of the discharge position. I don't know. It is interestingly timed right on top of each other.
Yeah.
But there's real, you know, You know, I can't, like you said earlier, I can't imagine that it was done just because they're just too risk averse. You know what I mean? That just doesn't sound right. There's got to be something there that they're trying to protect. Now, it does look bad for some of the guys that are near Trump. But once again, there's nothing here that really like anchor in on that. I mean, the media will spin it, right? MSNBC is going to make this all a big deal. But I haven't seen the evidence in any of that yet. So, you know, I don't know. It's cowardice, maybe, you know, is ultimately the motive. It's just like, I just don't want any negative press. But that doesn't sound like Trump either, right? That doesn't feel like that guy. He's the guy who's like telling the news media, no, you're fake news. Screw you guys.
Yeah.
You know, just keep up that energy, bro.
Well, I mean, he's that guy, except, you know, I feel like the one thing in here that could be interpreted as damaging by the Trump administration is some of those things you mentioned, the ties that Epstein had to influencing American foreign policy in favor of Israel. Mm-hmm. I mean, this administration is certainly very pro-Israel when it comes to foreign policy.
Get this. It gets worse, and I forgot to mention this. Jeffrey Epstein was lobbying the Obama administration to not do the nuclear deal and to do a direct confrontation with Iran.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
isn't that wild?
Okay, the nothing more in the world. So, this sounds like he was 100% working for Israel.
Right? Right? Like, if you have all the... It's what's tricky about this, Joe, is it requires so much knowledge about shit that people shouldn't care about because it's happening at other places, right? In the Middle East, a bunch of elite muckety-mucks doing all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah.
And so, like, you look at all the pieces and they start coming together. It's like, why are we doing this thing with Israel and Iran? It don't make any sense. There's no foreign policy reason for it that is directly tied to American security.
Right.
And then you look at this, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Jeffrey Epstein's at the centerpiece for Syria and Iran and just happens to have exactly the same foreign policy as Ben Shapiro in these things. Why?
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 Well, I don't know. I don't know, Dave.
I don't know either. I mean, you know, I mean, and it does seem like Epstein was a amoral, you know, player who would work against and for anybody. You know what I mean? I don't suspect that he was ideological. You know,
well, did he ever work against Israel?
I don't know. I don't have any evidence of that. But he definitely wasn't like partisan. He definitely was like reaching out and trying to get into these right wing circles too.
Right? Oh, for sure.
And so, like, I'm not suggest. I mean, yeah, I don't know what his architecture of belief was. We don't have any of that kind of resolution of belief of detail. But, you know, this leads credence to the whole idea that he might have been working for Israel. Israel. A Jew.
Are you doing a McConnell there? Or a Lindsey Graham? Israel? Just can't stand the way he says Israel.
Israel.
Candace yeah. Owens kind of does it too. That bothers me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
she says Israel.
Really?
Yeah.
Moist. What kinds of words you call
nah,
it?
Nah. That one doesn't faze me.
MAGA. MAGA. Yeah. So.
All right.
This does give us certain insights. I do think it's important to note. Melanie Lumen mentioned too. One more, actually. It wasn't exactly understood. Okay, so it was accused, but there was no smoking gun. But this definitely leads to the credence to the idea that ultimately our strategy throughout the Middle East in the Arab Spring was to disrupt countries on behalf of Israel. That Israel was covertly involved in the overthrowing of Assad. At a minimum, they were involved to the degree that we now have evidence to suggest that Ehud Barak was working with Mossad after he retired to try to end the war early by having Assad take down. That's a relatively humanitarian angle on that. Not too bad, but they definitely were in favor of and definitely pursued a strategy of overthrow. There have been other things done by serious reporters to suggest that there are more clandestine activities they were taking part of, including moving weapons and funding to certain groups to overthrow Syria. But none of it's proven. It's all just in that greasy, dark, smoky area we call covert ops. So, yeah. Another important revelation. And something that, you know, when all these things line up like dominoes like this, it's hard not to get the heebie-jeebies that this guy was something. He was definitely working spy work.
Yeah. Well, and it just definitely doesn't take the wind out of the sails of, you know, a guy like Nick Fuentes.
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't. And
it wouldn't be an episode of this podcast if we didn't mention Nick Hampton. So apparently. Thank you for bringing that up.
I mean, look. Yeah.
We're a Groyper podcast now, everybody.
You guys probably talked about him a bit while I was gone. In fact, I know you did. But it's just, that's a whole wing of the Republican Party now. You know, I mean, he'll probably be, you know, written down in the history books as being the leader of this whole like movement. And it's like crazy how much this movement has taken place. Mm-hmm. I mean, just looking back at like the TPUSA events that we've seen, mm-hmm. the one that we were at, mm-hmm. so many questions were oriented in this very direction. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a lot of people are just like putting the pieces together. The dominoes are lining up. Like you said, it's hard to just not see it and be like, well, that can't be nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be nothing.
It can't be.
Right?
Why does Jeffrey Epstein and Ben Shapiro have exactly the same foreign policy? I don't know, but it's weird. But you're just over here like, I'm just observing the fact this is a fact. Now, I'm sure they don't agree on everything. I'm being hyperbolic, but the whole point being,
I mean, they probably both think that Ben Shapiro's sister is hot.
There you go.
That might be inside baseball. Probably not. Everybody knows Ben Shapiro thinks his sister's.
But my point being, and Jeffrey Epstein did like the ladies. Jeffrey Epstein, the financier, has become a cultural meme, right? He's now a symbol for a thing. And it's like the worst parts of the American foreign policy empire wrapped into this Israel question. Nick Fuentes is representing of a political movement around that meme. And so by not just getting it out in the open and then just vetting it out, I can't imagine that. I mean, maybe there's some giant shoe to drop and that's what it is. And at the end of the day, it would just be, it'd blow up the world. We get the Samson option if we release the files and that's what it is.
That's kind of what it feels like. I mean, it feels like we're tracing the outline of a thing that's still completely shrouded in darkness, but we're getting the perimeter of it. And we're like, what's in there? Mm. And it has to come out at some point.
It has to. Well, I mean, now the discharge position has to go to the Senate. So at least we'll get the votes of who like thinks for themselves and actually cares about the promises of the constituents from the House and the Senate based upon how these next couple days go with the discharge petition. But we don't have, I mean, and that's an important thing for the electoral future of America. I absolutely think that. And that's the important part of that. This gunfight phenomena probably continues to play out where they're using it to snipe at each other if it fails, and it probably will at the end of the day. They just don't have the votes. At least it'll fail in the Senate.
And in order for it to be attempted again, does it have to go back through the House? Do they have to pass it again?
Yeah, the only place to originate a discharge position is the House, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So it will fail in the Senate. You're confident in that?
Well, they're the ones, they have the longest time horizon to the next election. So they're more likely to be able to have the political bandwidth to vote against, or at least for the Democrats to decide to vote against.
Sure.
Right? It's going to have to be a mixture of Democrats and Republicans to stop, for sure. Because we'll get a couple of Republicans voting for it for sure, right? Questions of
Rand Paul, probably.
Rand Paul, maybe Mike Lee. You know, I wasn't super impressed with Mike Lee's votes on the what we talked about in the last episode with the government reopening. But you know, he is a solid guy on many political issues and been very brave about particular political issues in the past. So maybe he'll be good on this. I hope he will. And I would actually like to see it all come out. I think it's important for us to understand to regain any amount of trust in our institutions. Like this line to the American people ultimately is the thing that's killing our country.
Well, I agree, but I don't think that the full release of the Epstein files is going to instill any degree of trust in our institutions. If anything, it's going to erode them further because we're going to realize how incredibly corrupt and manipulable our elites are, which we already kind of know.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to like really know.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get to that, but that is the fire that burns things down so that you can have a healthy forest again.
Sure. Right,
is my point. Yeah.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. You got to get to that place. And this has always been my frustration. It's been my frustration a lot for the last 2 years. You know, like foreign policy is my specialty. It's not the area that I didn't specialize in foreign policy when I was in college. Right. I didn't like, when I worked in D.C., I didn't work on foreign policy issues. talked about foreign policy. I got educated about it. I learned a lot about it, but I didn't, it was never my core area of interest. I was more into domestic policy, more into state policy, more into how to make the economy work better and how to make America a prosperous place. But in the last, you know, since starting the podcast and since doing all this work, you know, really has made me much more interested in this question because it seems to be the centerpiece of the biggest area of trust problem, right?
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The Environmental Protection Act is a major problem for us to be able to build stuff in America and actually be as prosperous as we otherwise could be. It's one of the reasons why American manufacturing disappeared that people never talk about. I'm willing to say it. A lot of people aren't. They're scared. But foreign policy is the area where at some point, after World War II, we said it's okay for the CIA to lie to the president and the president to lie to the American public. We've made that legal. And since then, it's been a slow decline that just gets worse and worse and worse with Watergate to the next thing. And to the point where we now look back at the declassified state and we say, oh, all that crazy shit they did. And we don't realize that's happening right now. And the amount of Republicans, for example, who don't know about American CIA operations in Nicaragua are one of the problems that we have such a bad immigration problem from Nicaragua to this day. 30 years of civil war, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people dead because of a civil war that we encouraged and invested in to make sure it was stayed as long as possible for our foreign policy goals. That stuff is become the centerpiece of all the most important discussion for our country. And anything that erodes that, that brings that into context for more people so that they can understand the government they're living on. They can actually understand the time, what time it is that the president isn't really in that much control of that much. And I'm not being conspiratorial. I'm trying to relate to the facts as I see them and as I read them and as I try to wrap my mind around this really big issue, which is 100 years of history of American hegemony and how we've dealt with being an empire. And it's hard to look at that in terms of like, especially once you've advanced the American first thesis and say like, well, this is where we're going. Why can't we get there? Well, it's because of this. It's Jeffrey Epstein is why, right? That system that enables that system and the CIA and the intelligence agencies, that's what enables it. That's what makes it what it is.
Well, then it makes you wonder too, you know, if the president is not in that much control, as you say, and I agree, if the apparatus around him, right, the deep state that is even in his very own inner circle, yeah, because we know it's represented there, absolutely has to be, if they are not making the release of the Epstein files a bigger issue, telling him certain things about what it means and doesn't mean, to keep him from doing it, because they know that if that light is shed on these activities, it is going to provide the context for the American people, and it is going to bring into question the future sustainability of the system that they've spent 100 years building.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's why they got to keep it quiet. That's why they got to hope it goes away. Mm-hmm. That's why we can't let it go away.
Well, you can certainly trust that we won't.
No, we will not.
We will not.
And next time
on Human Reaction.
Epstein files. We're not going to let it go. You shouldn't either.
Thank you so much for watching Human Reaction. For David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.